Okay, well, I don't have a gavel, so I'll just sort of pound my fist on my desk. Good morning. I'm Timothy Bowman, Secretary of the State Board of Review. I'd like to call the meeting of the State Board of Review to order at 9 a.m. and announce that the meeting is being held in conformance with the Texas Open Meetings Act, Chapter 551, Texas Government Code, and notice was posted with the Secretary of State's office as required. So just a brief announcement before we get going. This is an advisory board that reviews nominations for the National Register of Historic Places and makes recommendations to the THC staff and state Historic Preservation Officer. All public comments will be limited to the merits of the individual nominations and the documentation contained therein. And before speaking, if everyone could please state your name just so we know who's speaking in terms of record keeping, and also keep your mics muted when you're not speaking. So let's go ahead and have the board members introduce themselves. And this is actually quite exciting because we have a number of new board members who have joined with us today. So I'll go ahead and start, and then we'll just proceed in alphabetical order by last name. As I said, my name's Tim Bowman. I'm an associate professor of history at West Texas A&M University in Canyon, and I live in Amarillo.
I guess that makes me next. I'm Nesta Anderson. I am an archaeologist here in Austin working for Paleo West, and I am new to the board and very excited to be here.
And my name is Salem Mata Casper, and I am a historian and historic preservationist, and I'm located out of Houston.
Yes, I'm up to bat. I'm Tara Dudley. I'm a lecturer at the University of Texas at Austin, where I teach interior design history, historic preservation, and architectural history courses in the School of Architecture. I've also been a historic preservation consultant for the past 20 years. That's a long time. I'm also new to the board, happy to be here.
I'm Steve Klein, a preservation architect from Fort Worth.
I'm Anna Martinez-Katsum, professor of history at the University of Texas Permian Basin.
I'm Ben Couch, I'm an architect in Houston.
I'm Dr. Andrea Roberts. I'm a assistant professor of urban planning, and I teach historic preservation planning and community revitalization and planning history and theory at Texas A&M University, and also founder of the Texas Freedom Colonies Project. And I'm excited to join the board.
Is that me? Okay. I'm Hannah Vaughn. I'm an architectural historian and realtor in Austin.
I guess we skipped me. I'm having trouble with my alphabet this morning. This is Eric Schrenk. I'm an archaeologist, and I work with Texas Parks and Wildlife.
Mark Wellen, you with us?
He's in the meeting, but his microphone and camera are not turned on.
Oh, he's having technical issues. Okay. Mark can chime in later. Well, it's nice to see all of you, and it's nice to see so many new faces. And I do hope that we actually get to do this in person again before too long, which would be very nice to get to know some of you better. Okay, so I believe up next is Greg Smith with announcements from the THC.
Okay, good morning. Welcome to our board meeting. This is our third meeting that we've hosted online. Probably won't be our last. We like to usually go around the state and have meetings in various fine cities and towns in various parts of the state. Obviously, we can't do that these days. As Tim had mentioned, the purpose of the board is to review National Register nominations and provide its opinion regarding the eligibility and the documentation to our State Historic Preservation Officer. You'll hear the term SHPO sometimes. That's the acronym that we use. I'd like to introduce our Executive Director, Mark Wolf.
Thank you, Greg, and welcome everyone, and particularly new members. I'm always so impressed with the credentials of the folks that we have sitting around this table. It's quite impressive. And we appreciate very much that you're willing to give the time that is necessary to help us to accomplish this very important federal directive. And I'll turn it back over to Greg. Thank you.
Okay. I would also like to welcome Charles Sadnick. He's the Division Director of History Programs. That's where the National Register Program is housed at the THC. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Greg. I'm excited to be here today. I often say that State Board of Review meetings are perhaps the most joyous part of my job. So I am excited and really looking forward to seeing all the properties and districts on the agenda today. And I want to thank the staff in advance that does such a wonderful job, Greg and Judy and Alyssa and Bonnie. Thank you for all your work. And thank you to everyone out there for being here today.
Great. Thank you. So the goal today is to replicate the general structure of an in-person board meeting. So thanks for your patience. As I said, this is our third such meeting. There are sometimes surprises just due to the platform that we are using. So thanks for your patience. We ask the members of the public to keep your microphones and videos off unless you are addressing the board during a public comment period. This meeting is being recorded and the recording will be posted on the THC website. Just explain what the process is for this meeting. Staff will make a brief presentation for each nomination in the order indicated on the agenda. Board members may make motions to approve or not approve the nominations under consideration. There will be board discussion. Staff will participate as needed. There will be a call for public comment regarding each item. So in order to be recognized, it's preferable that you send a message in the Zoom chat function at any time stating your name and the nomination that you wish to speak about, and staff will note and make a list. When the chair opens the floor to comment, please raise your hand using the Zoom function. You will be recognized. The board will then vote. We ask the board members to please fill out your forms completely, write your comments on separate pages. These are things that we review very carefully after the meeting and before we finish off the nominations and send them off to the National Park Service. I would also like to welcome our new four board members, Dr. Anderson, Dr. Dudley, Dr. Roberts, and Dr. Schroeder. I want to give you an update on recent National Register activities since our last board meeting in September. We've had 12 listings, 6 more are pending. Some of the ones that have been approved in the past few months include Route 66 in Wheeler County, the Bogota Historic District, the Port Arthur Downtown Historic District, the Mechanical Laboratory and Powerhouse at Rice University, St. Anthony's Hospital in Amarillo. Many of these are tax credit projects. The Gage Hotel in Marathon and the Sterling City Depot in Sterling County, which is the first National Register listing in that county. We just received word that there are 2 new National Historic Landmarks. The Lower Pecos Canyonlands Archaeological Historic District in Valverde County and Waco Tanks in El Paso County. Now, this board doesn't review National Historic Landmark designations, so you haven't necessarily seen these, but they have been underway for some time. And we just received word that they were approved on January 13th. We are working on about 25 nominations right now, even during the pandemic. Things have not slowed down for us at all. So we've got some big ones coming up for the May agenda. And I will now turn it over to the chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Greg. And before we move forward, would Mark Wolf or Charles Sadnick like to address the board any further?
When you get to the El Paso nomination, I do have some information I'd like to share with you before you take public comment.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mark. Charles, anything you'd like to say?
Nothing for me, thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, moving forward, then we've got two quick items before we get to the nominations for this meeting. First, we need to elect new officers. So we need to elect a new chair, a new vice chairperson, and also a new secretary. So at this point, I will take nominations from the board for someone to serve as the new chair.
Hi, this is Steve Klein. I nominate you, Tim, as the new chair.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, any other nominations? Well, I guess that's it, and I am unopposed. All right, next order of business, any nominations from the board for vice chairperson?
Tim, do we need a second for your nomination? I'll second that.
I guess and, we probably do. Thanks, Hannah.
Okay, I will second that. And for vice chair, I move that we nominate Selah Mota-Casper.
I will go ahead and second Selah's nomination. Any other nominations from the board? Okay, so moved. Third, a nomination for secretary. And I will go ahead and nominate Hannah Vaughn.
Now, this is Steve Klein, and I'll second it.
Okay, thank you very much, guys. Now, and new officers, Hannah and Selah, congratulations. Last order of business before we move on to the nominations is approval of the minutes from the September 12th, 2020 meeting. Do I have a motion from the board?
This is Steve Klein. I move that we approve the minutes from the previous meeting.
This is Selah, and I second it.
Okay, thanks very much, everyone. All right, so first up then is the Aurora Apartment Hotel from San Antonio in Bexar County.
Good morning, this is Alyssa. Can everyone hear me?
We can hear you.
Aurora Apartment Hotel, San Antonio, Bexar County. This nomination was prepared by McGrosty Historic Advisors. The Part 1 was approved by Technical Preservation Services of the National Park Service on December 29, 2020. The Aurora Apartment Hotel, located at 509 Howard Street in the Northside neighborhood of San Antonio, Texas, is a 10-story with basement residential high-rise building with a three-story rooftop penthouse. Constructed as a premier South Texas apartment hotel between 1928 and 1930, the rectangular plan building is oriented towards and set back from Howard Street and overlooks Crockett Park to the east. The apartment hotel is a reinforced concrete with tan-colored rake face brick building with eclectic cast stone ornamentation that takes the form of a three-part vertical block with a clearly defined base, middle section, and parapet. The eclectic cast stone ornament features a blend of Spanish colonial revival, Beaux-Arts, Art Deco, and Gothic revival influences. An associated one-story with basement contributing commercial building constructed in 1930 sits at the northwest corner of the parcel, fronting West Laurel Street. The commercial building is also reinforced concrete with tan-colored rake face brick exterior. At the rear of the parcel is an asphalt parking lot in place of a 1930 parking garage built for the Aurora's guests that was demolished around 1970. The Aurora Apartment Hotel commercial building and garage were designed by architect Richard Vander Straten in association with architecture firm Herf & Jones. The exterior of the Aurora is remarkably intact and retains its massing, size, scale, and design of an early 20th century residential high-rise. A few of the ground floor public spaces were reconfigured in 1962 and 1982, and the original suites were remodeled, but despite these changes, the interior is largely intact. The commercial building is also largely intact, although the storefronts and interiors were altered at an unknown date. Apart from a few purposeful modifications, the property retains a high level of historic integrity. The Aurora Apartment Hotel is nominated to the National Register of Historic Places under Criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance as a rare and excellent example of an apartment hotel property type in San Antonio's north side, which developed as an upscale streetcar and automobile suburb. The Aurora is also significant for the high quality of its design as a luxury residential high-rise featuring eclectic ornamentation, reflecting a blend of Gothic Revival, Beaux-Arts, Spanish Colonial Revival styles, as well as Art Deco influences. The apartment hotel was the largest and most notable work in the architect's body of work. At the time of completion, the Aurora was South Texas's most lavish residential high-rise. Commissioned by the Emmy Dittmar Improvement Family, comprised of members of the notable German-Texan landholding Albert Dittmar family, no expense was spared to build the Aurora, which featured the latest amenities, catering to the work-and-play habits of upper and middle-class and seasonal tourists. The period of significance is the build date, 1930. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Alyssa. And is there anyone here who would like to speak on behalf of this nomination? And if so, please give us your full name before speaking. Okay, and moving forward, I will just ask all public participants in the meeting to please change your screen name to list your complete name in the chat function, followed by the nomination that you would wish to speak on as we move forward, as we have quite a few people who are in attendance today. Let's see, I looks like I have Adam Rapier who wants to speak on the nomination.
Yes, good morning. My name is Adam Rochefer. I'm with McCroskey Historic Advisors, and I am the primary author of this nomination before you. I just wanted to say very quickly that I'm really grateful for staff support, especially Alyssa. She's been very, very helpful. Also, I'm not sure if they're on the call, but we might be joined this morning by architect Charles John and by the owner, Mitch Meyer, who are both in support of the nomination. Thank you for your consideration, and I hope you love this building as much as we do. It's a beautiful Northside gem in San Antonio. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adam. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on behalf of this nomination? Okay, and now we will entertain a motion from the board.
This is Steve Klein. I move that we recommend this property for listing under C, architecture at the local level of significance, which the documentation justifies.
Okay, and do we have a second?
Nesta Anderson, I will second the nomination under criterion C, architecture at the local level.
All right, thank you, Nesta. Any discussion from the board? Okay, I'll take that as no discussion from the board then. So we have a motion on the table for listing the property under criterion C for architecture at the local level. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Up next, we have Borden's Creamery in San Antonio, Bexar County, excuse me.
Okay, this is Alyssa again. Borden's Creamery, San Antonio, Bexar County. This nomination was prepared by Mariah Pfeiffer and Post Oak Preservation Services Solutions. Part one was approved by Technical Preservation Services of the National Park Service on April 16, 2020. Borden's Creamery, located at 875 East Ashby Place in San Antonio, Texas, is a two-story reinforced and precast concrete modern industrial building. It was built for Borden's Associated Companies to house the Mistletoe Creamery in 1933 and later housed Borden's Creamery. The building, as well as its later historic additions added between 1946 and 1963, now read as one cohesive building. The building features a streamlined stucco exterior, fluted spandrels, vertical concrete pilasters, reeded banding at the parapet, a strong horizontal emphasis, historic fenestration pattern, mosaic tile, a regular floor plan, flat roof over the main building, and a central tower with a hipped glazed roof tile roof topped with a metal and glass light beacon. The modern characteristics are concentrated along the primary elevation, and the other elevations are obscured by later additions and sparsely treated.
Excuse me, Alyssa, we can't see your screen. If you're using two monitors, try moving it to the other monitor. There we go. Thank you.
That's better.
Sorry about that. Since the nomination was posted, rehabilitation tax credit work began, and most of the historic windows in the 1990s non-historic addition were removed. These changes were reviewed at the THC staff level and are currently under review at NPS. It's common to see nominations whose tax credit rehabilitation is in progress. While the building has experienced exterior alterations over the years, including several historic additions and little historic interior fabric, Borden's Creamery retains a high level of historic integrity. The property was used for industrial and light industrial purposes since the building's completion. Borden's Creamery was constructed in 1933 for Mistletoe Creamery by Borden's Associated Companies. At the time, the largest distributor of fluid milk in the United States prior to completion. The reinforced and cast concrete industrial building and subsequent additions built between 1946 and 1963 were designed by the San Antonio firm of Atlee B. and Robert M. Ayers and built by contractors King B. K. and Emmett T. Jackson. The plant reflects the evolutionary production process that transformed the American dairy industry between the early to mid 20th century. Borden's prospered during the 1940s, 1950s, and 1960s, leading to the plant's expansion and modernization. When acquisitions and mergers redefined the dairy industry throughout the late 20th century, many regional creameries, including Borden's, closed. Borden's remains the only historic building associated with the 20th century creamery industry in San Antonio. Borden's Creamery is nominated to the National Register of Historic Places under Criterion A, in the area of industry at the local level of significance for its association with modern milk production and distribution in San Antonio and the surrounding area during the early to mid 20th century. It is also nominated under Criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance as an intact example of modern industrial architecture by the firm of Ayers and Ayers. The period of significance extends from 1933 to 1971, which adheres to the NPS 50-year cutoff. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Alyssa. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to speak on behalf of this nominee? Okay. Is Mariah Pfeiffer with us today?
Yes. Hello. This is Mariah Pfeiffer. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Yes, and as Adam did earlier, thank you to Alyssa for helping polish up the nomination. I'm here to speak if there are any questions. I was the historian who compiled the part A and then developed the description section with Ann McGlone, who I'm not sure if she's joined the call or not, but if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Pfeiffer. Would anyone else like to speak on behalf of the nomination? All right. I will entertain a motion from the board.
This is Steve Klein. I move that we recommend this property for listing under A, industry, and C, architecture at the local level of significance, which the documentation justifies.
Okay, and can we get a second?
This is Anna Martinez-Katzum. I second.
Okay, thanks, Anna. And actually, before we open this up to discussion from the board, is Mark Osborne with us to speak on behalf of the nomination today?
Mr. Bowman?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
I'm sorry. I'm not to speak on this one. I just wanted to let you know that I'm getting text from a number of people who want to sign up and your chat is disabled, so they can't sign up on other items.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will have someone from the staff manage that. Thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you.
Let me speak on that, if I may, for a moment. I'd like to ask all participants to change their name to their full name in the chat, followed by listing the nomination that they'd like to speak on. We have a lot of attendees today, so it's hard to scroll, so we've disabled the chat. So the instructions are in the waiting room. Please rename yourself and list the nomination. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Judy. And a lot of attendees is a good problem to have. All right, so back to Borden's Creamery. Do we have any discussion from the board on this nomination?
This is Selah, and I just wanted to say that I really appreciated reading this nomination and was extremely impressed with the visuals that made it very helpful to understand the evolution of the building. So I just wanted to state that for the record.
Thanks, Selah. Okay, anybody else? Well, I'll have one thing that just to add, which is just a minor point. Let me just go to my notes here. On page 12, I thought it might be worth mentioning that the Telegraph and Texas Register, which Gail Borden was a founder of, is one of the most important primary sources on the Texas Revolutionary period. And I'm always, as a historian who's interested in the Southwest, really delighted to hear about Gail Borden. I mean, he was just a fascinating man. And I also want to second Selah's point that this is a really nicely done nomination, but might be worth just adding that sort of tweaking that discussion of the Telegraph and Texas Registers. That's that source is a big deal, I think.
Thanks, Tim. We'd be happy to add that.
Tim, could you say that again? It's the one of the most important sources for which?
For the Texas Revolutionary era, so the mid-1830s, 1835, 1836.
Tim, this is Mark Whalen. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Mark.
I'm sorry about my technical problems. I wanted to make one comment about the Bordens. There was a lot of conversation in the early parts of the presentation where it talks about precast concrete. But when you get to page 23, it talks about cast concrete. I think that might be a little technical misstep. I didn't see any evidence of precast concrete in this project. And I think it is, and it's elaborated on further into the presentation about cast concrete, which would mean cast in place. I think that one little technical thing should probably be cleaned up.
We'd be happy to make that change. Thanks, Mark.
Sure.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, so we have a motion to include Borden's Creamery in the National Register under criterion A for industry, criterion C for architecture at the local level of significance. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay, motion carries. Up next, we have the Texarkana National Bank.
We cannot hear you talking.
All right, can you hear me now?
That's better.
All right, sorry.
No problem.
I'll start over again. Texarkana National Bank, this was prepared by Jacob Evans of Revival Architecture for property owner Texarkana Renewal Properties, LLC. The eight-story Texarkana National Bank sits a few yards west of the Arkansas state line in downtown Texarkana. Just want to point out, this is the state line, and this is our subject property, mere yards away from Arkansas. The next nomination on the agenda is for the Motor Bank, and that is up here on the northwest, just northwest of this building. This building was designed by Sanguinet and Stotts, the first phase completed in 1913. The building is one of the tallest in the Central Business District. The complementary 1924 addition by Sanguinet, Stotts, and Hedrick doubled the building from a 25-foot width to a 50-foot width. In 1968, the facade was clad in marble and aluminum panels, and a five-story annex was added to the west side. After being sold by Texarkana National Bank in 1996 and trading hands several times, Texarkana Renewal Properties bought the building in 2020. In 2020, following plans to rehabilitate the building, the cladding was removed, revealing that much of the building's exterior had been retained under the slipcover. This is a real miracle, and it's been wonderful to see this happening. An excellent example of a three-part vertical block skyscraper, the building facade is composed of a decorated base, a plain brick shaft, and an ornate single floor column capital section, which is at the top floor. The detailing is typical of many commercial buildings of the early 20th century. The upper level of the facade acts as a column capital for the three-part vertical block composition. Brick pilasters separate the bays. There are tile insets in a geometric pattern. The entablature is topped by a parapet wall. This is a close-up photo just showing really the major extent of the damage from the time that the slipcover was placed, was that some of the cast stone detailing at this level was chiseled off. But this is some of the most extensive damage from that period. The north and west elevations are fairly simple and unadorned. The first floor had a grand open space, service spaces, hallway to the elevator lobby, bathrooms, and stairwells. Coffered ceilings with crown molding are partially hidden by contemporary finishes. Some pieces are damaged or missing. This is also a project that's underway. And so the obvious non-historic fabric is currently being removed. So, you know, on a regular basis, we're getting updated photographs from the consultants showing the result of that removal. And now we can see more and more of the historic fabric as the project goes on. The upper floors of the entire building are office levels. Many of the original wood doors and trim remain. Wanted to show you around a little bit here. The lobby, you can see some of the original flooring is now being exposed. This is on the first floor, but it shows the hall configuration that's present throughout the building and the types of doors that are present through the building that are original. Texarkana was established in December 1873 with the sale of city lots on the state line. Together, the cities of Texarkana, Texas, and Arkansas quickly became the business center in the region. The Texarkana National Bank organized in 1887 and eventually became the largest bank in the city and a cornerstone for business and development in the region for well over a century. After the eight-story building opened in 1914, the upper floor offices were rented to various tenants, including attorneys, architects, insurance companies, physicians, dentists, and also U.S. Congressman William Patman and Morris Shepherd. Local growth after World War II led to an expansion of Texarkana, both cities, in land area and in increased commerce. By 1960, Texas National Bank began operating branch offices around the region. TNB merged with Hibernia Bank in 1996, and the building served as a Capital One branch starting in 1999, but the building has been unoccupied since 2014. The Texarkana National Bank is nominated under Criterion C at the local level for its architectural significance as an exemplary Beaux-Arts ornamented three-part vertical block by Sanguin and Stotts, later Sanguin at Stotts and Hedrick. The firm formed in 1903 and designed numerous commercial and civic structures and is recognized as being among the first in Texas to design large steel frame office buildings. The building's ornamentation is an excellent example of the Beaux-Arts style. It includes a highly decorated base of terracotta and granite. The period of significance is 1913 to 1924, when the original skyscraper and its full height addition were completed. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much, Greg. And just before moving forward, I'll ask that everyone be a little patient with us since there are so many people in attendance at these meetings. We wanna make sure that we don't skip over anyone accidentally who would like to speak on behalf of a nomination. Is Anna Maud with us today?
Yes, this is Anna Maud. I'm here. This is not my nominee.
I apologize for the confusion. Nope. Is there anyone present today who would like to speak on behalf of this nomination? Okay, I'll entertain a motion from the board.
This is Steve Klein. I move that we recommend this property for listing under C, architecture at the local level of significance, which the documentation fully justifies.
Sayla, I second that we recommend this property.
Thanks, Steve and Sayla. Any discussion from the board?
This is Steve. I just have some very small things. It's great to see this nomination go forward and the boat slip cover coming off this building. It's really a wonderful find. So very pleased to see this happen. My very minor suggestions are that for on the boundary page, graphically, you know, it shows the to use what you did in the presentation where you actually showed the line around the building.
Okay.
Show the boundaries, because when you read through it, you can figure it out, but it was a little confusing because on each one you have, you know, Texarkana National Bank and, you know, and then the Motor Bank as to what each nomination was covering. As I said, it becomes clear when you read them, just
to okay. some
point. And then the other thing is on this nomination, in the footer, you show it as Section 9 instead of Section 8 with the statement of significance. I assume that was just a page break.
Yes. And it
sort of, you know, did that. So as I said, just really two small points, and it's great to see this nomination going forward. Thank you.
Okay, any other comments from the board? All right, so we have a motion to include the Texarkana National Bank under criterion C, architecture at the local level of significance. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. All right, next we have the Texarkana National Motor Bank and Parking Garage.
Okay, Texarkana National Motor Bank and Parking Garage. Can everybody hear me?
We can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, very good. This was also prepared by Jacob Evans of Revival Architecture for the property owner, Texarkana Renewal Properties, LLC. So this is owned by the same owner as the historic skyscraper bank. The Texarkana National Motor Bank is a four-story building in downtown Texarkana. By 1960, Texarkana National Bank was the largest banking institution in Texarkana. To keep up with changes in the banking industry practice and demand to accommodate automobiles in the downtown area, TNB constructed this modern building next door to its original location to provide modern convenience and service to customers. The perforated concrete screen exterior, elevated mass, and modern concrete structure makes it an excellent example of the new formalist style. In 1962, to celebrate the bank's 75th anniversary, TNB purchased its original location, constructed between 1885 and 1987, and internally connected the two buildings and extended the Motor Bank's concrete screen facade. The Texarkana room on the second floor provided was provided at no cost to serve community groups. That's in the 1962 annex. From its construction until closure in 1989, the building provided modern and convenient banking environment for its patrons with a drive-through and walk-up tellers. And so I just want to show you some examples of these services: the teller lanes, night deposit box, walk-up teller window. These are from a 1962 brochure. The north elevation contains the entrance to the Motor Bank and parking garage, entrance and exit. On the east elevation is a walk-up teller window, exit from the Motor Bank, and the annex building entrance. The upper floors are decorated with perforated concrete screens. So if you can see my cursor, this here is the original Texarkana National Bank building, which was internally connected with the annex. The concrete screen was added to it to make it uniform with the 1960 Motor Bank. And so there are two buildings originally, but we're looking at this as one single building for the purpose of the tax credit project. On the east elevation is a walk-up teller window, exit from the Motor Bank. The upper floors are decorated with perforated concrete screens. That's on the two primary elevations. The pedestal concrete screen and concrete structure are common characteristics of buildings in the new formalist style. The other two facades are relatively unadorned. So inside the Motorbank building, the interior is mostly unchanged. A brick wall separates the Motorbank and the parking garage functions. The east half contains the drive-through teller booth, walk-up teller window, a bathroom, and a 24-hour area for making deposits. I want to show you the second floor of the parking garage and then the top floor of the parking garage. The 1962 annex can be accessed through a corridor connecting the two. The parking garage is entered through the left entrance shown here with this red arrow. This red line shows on the first floor the division of the functions between the Motorbank and the ramp going up to the upper floors of the parking garage. Yellow rectangular tiles decorate the eastern, western, and southern walls on the interior of the Motorbank, and a concrete ramp spirals up through the four parking decks, as you can see on this plan. The annex is entered either from the sidewalk or through the parking garage. Most of the alterations occurred when the Motorbank ceased operations in 1989. And this is mostly the removal of signage, most notably the large red letter signs in the north and east elevations, and the entrance and exits to the Motorbank were sealed with steel stud walls. The Motorbank was designed by Wyatt Hedrick, one of the most prolific architects in Texas, and is among the most prominent examples of mid-century modern design in Texarkana. New formalist architecture, of which the bank is a prime example, emerged in the 1950s in response to rigid forms of modernism and took advantage of advancements in concrete technology to create new decorative devices, such as perforated concrete facades. Nationwide, the style was applied mainly to large-scale banking institutions and public buildings, usually using a carefully organized hierarchy of space with exterior emphasis on the construction grid of the building. This building employs an extensive installation of perforated concrete solar screens, common in Sunbelt states, such as Texas in the late 50s through the mid-1960s. This concrete screen is distinguished by its large custom panels. A survey in May 1957 found that over 50% of the more than 3,200 members of the American Bank Association member banks had either constructed or planned to build Motorbanks. The building is an excellent example of the evolution of the parking garage into the 1960s. The column and waffle slab system provided an open structure strong enough to support the weight of 175 cars. The property is nominated under criterion C in the area of architecture as an excellent local example of a Motorbank and parking garage finished with perforated concrete screen, and as a late example of the work of Wyatt Hedrick's firm. The period of significance is 1960 to 1962, the date of the Motorbank's construction and the expansion into the annex in 1962. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Greg. Is there anyone who would like to speak on behalf of the Texarkana National Motorbank? Okay, we will entertain a motion from the board.
This is Selah, and I move that we recommend this property for listing under criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance, which the documentation fully justifies.
This is Steve Klein, I second it.
Okay, thanks very much. Any discussion from the board? Okay, well, our motion is to include the Texarkana National Motor Bank at for criterion C, architecture at the local level of significance in the National Register. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Up next, we have the Wedgwood Apartments in Dallas.
This is Bonnie. Can y'all hear me?
We can hear you, Bonnie.
Great. Thank you all for being here today. And just to make sure, can you see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Jay Fershing with Architexes prepared the nomination for the property owner, Westmount Kessler Park. Wedgwood Apartments is an 11-story international-style apartment building on an 8.6-acre site in Southwest Dallas. Dallas architect Walter W. Alschlager Sr. designed the Y-shaped building, completed in 1965, as an all-inclusive residential home for retired adults. Wedgwood Apartments has three equally spaced wings with a curved radius of sweeping horizontal facades. Its horizontal emphasis is amplified by continuous bands of aluminum ribbon windows set back from the floor slab edges and that serve as shade devices at each level. At the top of the building, an exterior balcony with cast concrete guardrails, and a low gabled roof mark the location of the common room at the 11th floor penthouse on the north wing. A central drum hides the mechanical enclosure on the otherwise flat roof of the other wings. The wings terminate at integral stair towers set back from the main facades, with the terminal ends clad in windowless walls of vertically ribbed concrete panels and a central band of decorative screen blocked. A folded plate roof porte cochere is at the apartment entrance. You can see the underside of it right there. There are 8 resources, 7 contributing and 1 non-contributing within the nominated property boundary. The 1965 3-story parking garage with a spiral ramp and CMU screen block is considered contributing. Here are some of the other, Wedgwood Apartments landscape design was a significant amenity marketed to prospective residents. Still intact, it is considered a contributing site with 3 individually counted features: the fountain, swimming pool, and man-made pond. Inside, the lobby features 2 elevators and a fire stair that service upper floors. While the lobby largely retains its original configuration, the remainder of the common spaces on the first floor, including the commercial areas, have been remodeled and rearranged, except for a commercial kitchen. Finishes in the lobby are non-historic. The building's 311 apartments and 9 floor plans retain their original layouts and bathroom finishes, but finishes throughout the remainder of each unit vary from original to non-historic. Despite changes to the interior common areas and a contemporary paint scheme on the exterior, the Wedgwood retains a high degree of architectural and historical integrity. The Wedgwood, completed in 1965, is the final design of prominent architect and developer Walter Alschlager, who planned the Dallas building as his own place of retirement. Its construction corresponded with an era when housing options marketed to senior citizens expanded and at the beginning of high-rise residential development in Dallas. Marketed as an all-in-one facility with a medical center, restaurant, hair salon, library, interior social rooms, and large outdoor recreation, which included membership to the municipal golf course. The building plan was designed to accommodate its aging residents with the central core and parking garage that helped limit walking distances in and around the property. Duplicate buildings were slated for Houston and San Antonio, but only the San Antonio project was realized, and it was listed in 2017. Born in Chicago in 1887 and the son of an architect, Alschlager attended the Lewis Institute of Technology, Armour Institute, and Art Institute of Chicago. Working alongside developers early in his career, he believed in having a financial stake in his projects. He moved to Texas in the 1940s when he designed the Mercantile Bank Building in Dallas. The stylistic evolution of his designs reflect his ability to observe and master revivalist and early modernist architectural trends. An evolution to pure, his evolution to pure modernism is exemplified by later designs like the Wedgwood and the Mercantile Building. Alschlager passed away in 1965, having never lived in the Wedgwood. Wedgwood Apartments is an excellent local example of mid-1960s international style, which is characterized by an emphasis on volume over mass, the use of lightweight, mass-produced industrial materials, rejection of ornament and color, repetitive modular forms, and the use of flat surfaces, typically alternating with areas of glass. Its style and plan are similar to the 1956 Statler Hotel in Dallas, which was hailed for its use of new techniques, including the implementation of cantilevered structural systems and its strong horizontal emphasis, with the use of ribbon windows, symmetry, and repetitive forms. The Wedgwood Apartments is eligible under criterion C at the local level of significance in the area of architecture as an excellent mid-century interpretation of the international style and as the last notable project of renowned architect Walter W. Alschlager. The period of significance is 1965, the date of the building's completion.
All right. Thank you very much, Bonnie. And I have been asked that if members of the audience would like to speak about a nomination, please use the hand raise function in the chat just so we can manage this a little more sufficiently since we have such a large crowd. So I will give you all a moment, but if there is anyone who would like to speak on behalf of this nomination, please make yourself known. Okay, I'll entertain a motion from the board.
This is Steve Klein. I move that we recommend this property for listing under C, architecture at the local level of significance, which the documentation justifies.
This is Andrea Roberts, and I second.
Thank you very much. Okay, any discussion from the board?
This is
Ben Tim, Ellison. Can you hear me? This is Mark Whalen.
We can hear you, Mark.
I think it would help in the early paragraphs where there's mention of a identical project in San Antonio that it be attributed to the architect. I know that's clarified later, but it's a little misleading at first. When I first read that, I thought, did he design it or was it a copy of something else? So I think it would help to just clarify that early on. And then it probably wouldn't hurt to proofread the entire presentation. I noticed on page 10 that there were numerous typos. I don't remember the paragraph, but I think there was reference to what should have been adorned facade, but it was some scrambled version of that, and integrity was misspelled. But I think I picked up several in that page. I just don't think it would hurt to kind of proof the entire form.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, I would just piggybacking on that second comment. I noticed some typos. And, you know, the semester started, so I'm in teacher mode, but some subject verb issues. There was an issue on page 13, I believe, in reference to living conditions that needs to be hammered out also.
This is Ben Cash. I have a couple comments I'd like to make regarding the section on the international style. I think this building should really be discussed under the rubric of new formalism. Because the facades are all identical and it has the sunshades, but they're all the same regardless of the actual solar orientation. My other comment would be the building that they talk about in Paris. I know that is UNESCO World Headquarters, not as a cultural center. I would probably talk about it with its historic name. And the architect of that building was Marcel Breuer with Pierluigi Nervi, and I don't think his the name of the architect. I would also point out that there's an identical building in Houston, the Bayou Manor, which was built in 1963 by Wilson Morris Crane and Anderson.
Thank you.
Ben, would you restate the name of the historic name of the building in Paris and the architect, please?
Sure, it's the UNESCO headquarters building. And the architect is Marcel Breuer, and the engineer is Pierre Luigi Nervi.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments from the board? Okay, and Hannah, I should apologize as former secretary. If we're going too fast, feel free to stop me and let me know. I know you have a lot of notes to jot down and take.
Thanks, Tim. I'm good.
You bet. Okay.
We can move on.
All right. So the motion is to include the property under criterion C for architecture at the local level of significance. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Up next, we have the Downtown El Paso Historic.
And